This is CliffCentral.com.
Here's a powerful thing. I mean, it's got a lot of firepower. If you can figure out a way to wrestle that fear, to push you from behind rather than stand in front of you, that's very powerful.
I have a dream.
Multiplying leadership, moving society, the millennial way.
You don't want to end up going after goals and dreams and neglect yourself.
Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform with your host, Bongani Dao.
Listen, take control. Take control of your city. This is the instrument of your liberation.
See, old friend, I brought more soldiers than you did.
Identify yourself to the world.
Youth Leadership Platform.
A very good afternoon. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Youth Leadership Platform. I am your host, Bongani Dao. And right now, what's happening today is we've got another exciting batch of guests who are going to speak on very important issues within South Africa. Today's topic is activism. Activism in its broader sense. What is activism? But our main focus is going to be activism in the digital age. So how are you using technology to advance certain causes that you're passionate about? My guests today are doing such amazing and very important things. And we're going to talk about some of the things that are happening currently in our country, one of which is the passing of Dr. Bongani. We are very saddened by that. And we're going to unpack that a bit to talk a bit about depression, to talk a bit about how, you know, tertiary institutions system within the South African context and the environment, everything that contributes to someone suffering from a mental illness to go to that extent. I mean, we read about university students who are committing suicides every now and again, and it's very problematic. We're going to bring in an expert from SADC who's going to speak on how to deal with depression. We're also going to speak to them as well, the organization, about how we as people who live with people who've got depression can be able to be there for them. But first up, we have the editor of Cosmopolitan on the line, and we're going to touch based on activism from that front for now. We're going to carry the conversation from there. Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
Very well, thank you.
Awesome, awesome. So, social media backlash is the starting point. I've got one of many ladies that tweeted to, you know, kind of question the approach, what Cosmopolitan stands for, what your aims are as well with this issue. Would you like to comment on that to begin with?
Yeah, absolutely. So Nomzamo is the cover start of our August issue, and August is Women's Month. And what we really wanted to do is engage with the current discussion around women empowerment and equality. And that includes topics around Me Too and Time's Up. Mm-hmm. And for me as an editor, it was very important to find a local woman with a visible track record of fighting for social change.
Sure.
And there really was no doubt in my mind that Nomzamo is that person. She really is a celebrity with great substance. She is a UNHCR ambassador. She's traveled to refugee camps in Kenya and Sudan to really help humanize the plight of displaced women and refugees. She's also been very vocal on issues of mental health. At her graduation, as we know, we saw her wear a dress printed with SADC's toll-free anxiety and depression helpline. Mm. So she really is impassioned and vocal. And for me, she really was the perfect cover staff for our August activism issue.
Interesting. And what can readers expect from some of, I guess, the hashtags and topics covered within the issue itself?
Yeah. So we actually did two covers. So our main cover saw Nom Damo in a bodysuit. And we had that bodysuit custom made by our fashion editor and our creative director. Mm-hmm. And we had it printed with words that are really relevant to the discussion around women empowerment today. So we use words like feminist, me too, time's up, activist, womandler, power, fearless, fun, female. And then for our second cover, we did a limited edition cover. We had 5,000 copies printed only. And in that, we had the same words printed on a duck, which in itself is a powerful symbol of resistance. And 5 rand from every copy sold, we are donating to a charity called Skaterstan. Now, Skaterstan is an outreach center and an NGO based in Johannesburg. And what they do is they teach young girls how to skateboard. And they use skateboarding because skateboarding is sort of traditionally seen as a boys' sport. You know, it's not accessible to girls. Mm-hmm. And they do that to tell girls, young girls from underprivileged backgrounds, you know, you can be anything you want to be. If you want to be a pro skateboarder, you can be. If you want to be a pilot, you can be. If you want to be an accountant, you can be. And they help young girls with homework support while they're in school, career education. They help matriculants put their CVs together. Mm-hmm. And that is where 5 rand from each limited edition copy sold is going. And then on the 11th of August, we are co-hosting with Skaterstan our girls only skateboarding session. It's a Saturday morning. It's from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Uh-huh. And we are selling tickets at 50 rand each, and all proceeds will be going to Skaterstan.
Interesting. So I guess you can stay tuned to the Youth Leadership Platform, because I guess, well, Nelisa has had an actually burning question to ask. I don't know if you can go ahead and just ask a question right before we let you go.
Hi, you're speaking to Nelisa.
Hello.
So my question, I think when I tweeted about the cover, was not really about I guess Nom Damo, because Nom Damo's work, I mean, speaks for itself. We know her, she's a very loved celebrity in South Africa. My question was really about Cosmo, the platform itself, because activism itself speaks to systemic change. It speaks to structural change. Mm. And my question was, how does a platform like Cosmo, which is not very transformed in terms of your editorial makeup, how ironic is it then that you are, you know, sort of riding the wave of you know, the hashtag activism, hashtag girl power, hashtag feminism 101. I actually bought a copy over the weekend and I read it. So my question was, you know, what is your contribution to actual change when it comes to your own organization in terms of who gets to dictate what the narrative is? How do you, you know, what informs what you put out there? Mm-hmm. Of course, the cover is going to sell. Nom Damo is popular. We love her. But how do you avoid reducing, you know, almost reducing something that is so, you know, as black women, we live this every day. So how do you explain that when your own organization does not speak to that? And I say, I ask this question because Vanessa Raffaele was interviewed by Ashraf Garda a couple of months ago. And when I asked the same question to her about what is the vision around transforming senior staff at Cosmo? Her response was, oh, we're launching an internship program.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that you've asked this question. It's a question that I've been asked before. And it's something that I, representation and diversity of the Cosmopolitan team is something that I am really passionate about. And I am really pleased to announce that I have just appointed Noxolo Mafulu, who is the current deputy editor at Huffington Post, as the deputy editor on Cosmopolitan, and she's going to be joining our team from the 1st of August. And actually, the Cosmopolitan team, when I joined as editor last year, I was kind of not given a clean slate, but I was given the opportunity to recruit new members to the team and to also look at those contributing to the magazine and ensure that the contributors, the freelance journalists we use, are diverse and representative of our reader. And I've worked really, really hard to ensure that happens and to diversify the team from senior to junior level positions. And I'm really, really proud of that. And I think that that really reflects in our content. So to answer your question around the activism issue, I think the key to really making sure that we are representative of the type of change all women and different women want to see happening in South Africa, we made sure that we collaborated with a variety of voices. So one of the main features we did is called Agents of Change.
Okay.
And there we have, for example, Ntabisen Makona, and she is a member of the Intersex Society of South Africa. She's a human rights activist, and she particularly focuses on healthcare services, especially around HIV, TB, mm-hmm. and sexual and reproductive health rights.
Mm-hmm.
She's a passionate LGBTQI social justice issue campaigner, and she is the regional advocacy officer for the AIDS and Rights Alliance for Southern Africa. Another person that we actually featured 8 women.
Okay.
Each of them passionate about different issues. And another one of those is Busisiwe Sibe, and she was head of logistics back in 2015 for the Fees Must Fall Rising.
Mm.
And then a third one, for example, is Poncho Pilan, and she is she was really kind of spearheading the movement to abolish tampon tax in South Africa. And make menstrual hygiene products and sanitary wear accessible mm-hmm. to all women. And that's something that we collaborated with her on in this issue. It's something that we campaigned for back in June. And when you talk about systemic change, for example, back in June around Gynae Health Day, National Gynae Health Day,
mm-hmm.
we launched a big nationwide campaign against tampon tax, calling on signatures. We got over 50,000 signatures, and that is something that we will be taking to the Women's Committee. We have been in touch with the Women's Committee. So we are using our platform to gather diverse voices
mm-hmm.
and bring about change from the top down, we hope. That's our mission and that's our objective.
Well, thank you so much, Holly, for joining us on the show. We'll move back into the studio. And right before we actually engage in the conversation with my in-studio guest, we're going to listen to a clip from Kevin Naidu. We attended the Marie-Claire Power Summit as well. And I was one of 10 men in a room full of women. And I learned a lot from that. And so Kevin Naidu had this to say.
Hi, I'm Kevin Naidu from The Orbit. I'd just like to say it's been a great day, great event thus far. It's nice to get a different perspective on business, on youth, on our society. And I myself am just tired of a single voice, or seemingly a single voice and a single perspective on what's happening in society. So one of the most important aspects for me is around safety for women. I think when we look at discrimination, one of the worst aspects of that is actually not allowing someone to realize their full potential. And something as simple as safety doesn't allow somebody to feel free, to feel safe, and to actually express themselves freely. That's such a, it's not just for women, but for society in general, that's such a wasteful, a wastefulness to waste someone's full potential.
That was Kevin Naidoo. So now, ladies, in front of me, I would love to have you introduce yourselves. And then I guess before we even start speaking about what Kevin Naidoo just spoke about, issues of safety, issues of discrimination, and how that impacts one's ability to reach their potential, you know, in whatever sphere or in however way you experience discrimination in this world. So I'm going to start with Nelisa. Kindly introduce yourself. Tell us what you do, and then we'll move on to Lerato, and then we'll address the issue from there.
Okay, my name is Nelisa Ngolana, Cape Townian, now living in Johannesburg.
Don't leave babes with petitions behind. What is this?
I guess I'm here. I guess I'm here because of that. So where I work, I run a PR agency that I own. I also run a platform for freelance journalists who are called Media Fair to Africa. So people who work from rural areas who are freelancers out there. So to try and connect them to news editors in urban centers, you can follow us at Indabanet on Twitter. And outside of my work, I'm just a person who's very outspoken. I can't be quiet when I see injustice.
Sure.
I guess because I, you know, unlike a lot of you guys in the room, I still come from a generation where... many times you are the first black person
to do
around
stuff.
The table.
Sure.
So I guess, you know, speaking up on things is just natural.
Sure.
My name is Lerato Motaung, and I am, what am I currently doing? I'm surviving. I am surviving, but I am also... the reason why I'm here, I'm an activist, so I'm part of a few initiatives such as the Total Shutdown, the We Are Nomzamo Collective, still a FISMUS full activist.
Sure.
So there's been a number of things that I've been doing. And why am I, just like Nelisa, I don't have a stop. If I see something that's going wrong, I'm going
to
fight.
You're going to voice, yes.
Yeah, and sometimes I forget how small I am. I don't like bullies.
Okay.
I really don't like bullies, and a lot of injustice and discrimination is just a performance of bullying. And it just grates
people with an excessive need to dominate, right?
Yeah. Insecurity and privilege, when mixed together, become very dangerous.
Sure. You heard Kevin Naidoo. What is the first thing that popped into your mind?
I think for me, the idea around safety is something that I'm constantly aware of as a mother of a teenager. Mm-hmm. I think the first time it ever became such a reality, as in my own home, was when my daughter started high school and she had to walk from home. My worry wasn't her kind of doing her own thing, because she's quite a well-disciplined person.
Sure.
But I was worried about the fact that it's a 5-minute walk between, you know, home and school. But knowing that she's not safe in the world, and there's nothing that I can do about that. So for me, I guess also as an older person, you get to a point where you accept that that's the way things are, that we are not safe. You accept that that's that, you know, you learn to kind of survive. to make your way around, knowing that, you know, I can't be at a specific place at a certain time. I can't walk at a certain place. I have to, if I'm going to walk alone across Mandela Bridge, I need to find a man who's walking alone and ask him to walk with me, or whatever the case may be. Mm. It's just, I guess, you know, it becomes part of who we are, and it becomes part of our thinking.
Sure.
In terms of, you know, knowing that we are not safe, even in relationships, you know, at the slightest, you know, raising of a voice, you're just like, I'm out. So you are constantly, I mean, right there in your own bedroom, it's something that we have to constantly be aware of. And it's been interesting as well for me. I have a son. My son is almost three. It's changing a lot of how I, you know, his father and I were actually talking about teaching him consent, you know, even just, you know, things like that.
Sure,
we're now,
sure,
we live in an age where I have to teach him, you know, to say yes or no if he wants to be hugged or kissed or whatever, because you want to create that, you know, that thing of him knowing what's right and what's wrong, and mm-hmm. that for me is a little bit, it's quite a scary thing.
When you reflect on that, it's an interesting point that you should raise that as a mother, because there's an aspect of, I guess, the whole issue about raising men that will make, or Ngatini, men that will not threaten the very livelihood of women, and how what role women have in that, right?
Yeah.
But Lerato, let's hear your views, Kala, on Kevin Naidoo before we get into anything.
I mean, I agree. I think what I would just like to add to that would be that it actively shrinks the space you can occupy in the world. It makes your world that much smaller, right? Like Nelly was saying, that you have to think about where you're walking, who you're even taking something as simple as a taxify or an Uber.
Sure.
You have to think about your safety as a woman. But I also want to touch on the psychological implications of living with that everyday violence, right? Mm-hmm. Because women are constantly living with anxiety.
Sure.
And that has, I mean, you're going to talk about depression later and the triggers for that. But the fact that we're constantly living with anxiety means that half our brain potential is taken by constantly thinking about, where am I going to go? Who am I going to be with? Is this person going to harass me? And it contributes to depression and all those things. And if you think about limiting potential, that's the part, you know, how am I walking around in a world so filled with anxiety, and yet the world wants me to show up fully as myself?
Those are some very powerful and very important, I guess, aspects to this conversation that you're raising. How would you define activism?
For me, it is, you know, when I got the email about the fire, I was just like, oh, I think
you
for
didn't
me,
go to Google.
No, I think, I mean, I think I've had, you know, quite a number of conversations around isms,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And I think, in another conversation around feminism, for example, mm-hmm. my immediate response is always, the terms confuse me personally, and I regard myself as, you know, as somebody who, if there's an injustice, I speak about it. But I think, for the sake of the conversation, I define activism as championing systemic or quite fundamental, you know, driving for tangible change.
Sure.
I think there has to be that element of changing in a big way. So it's not just sending out one tweet. There has to be a fundamental change. You know, there has to be the moving from one point to the next.
Sure.
That for me is how I define it for myself.
Lerato?
So, unlike Zibinki next to me...
Wow.
I actually went to Google because I mean, first, I took for granted that I knew what activism was, that okay. I could define it.
Sure.
But then I realized that I actually don't know what activism was. So I went to Google, and Google says it's the campaigning and mobilizing to bring about political and social change, which is what Nelly's touching on, right? Fundamental sure. political change. Mm-hmm. But then I started thinking about the fact that activism does not necessarily mean that it's a good thing, right? I mean, think about how white people were advocating for fundamental change during apartheid or to keep the status quo.
Sure.
It's not necessarily a good thing. I think it matters that the context is highlighted.
Mm.
Sure. Mm. Absolutely agree.
So in the context of magazines coming into play, where the content that has been fed to the public. Am I getting you rolled up right now?
No. So I think part of the point that I was making with the Cosmo issue, for example, was around the fact that you get, for example, a Destiny, right?
Sure,
which
sure.
completely like burst onto the scene to try and obviously create a space for what success looks like for us okay. as black women, what okay. excellence looks like as women, how we can learn from each other in that way. And then you have I think before this, I hadn't looked at Cosmo since I was like, I don't know, 25, and that was a long time ago, primarily because Cosmo is always about, you know, sex, you know, how to please your man, which is great. I mean, those things are fine. Yeah. But also, I think for me, we need to be true and genuine to issues, and also we also need to be able to question the platforms that claim to advocate for us, because I mean I still don't think, you know, even after the explanation, I still feel let's not hijack you know, things that are so deep and so, you know, I think it speaks to what you were saying around how where activism can be positive or negative, and also understanding that people hijack things to suit their own narratives.
Interesting. Lerato?
So when the Cosmo issue hit the platforms, right, the social media platforms, and so by no means, I love Nomzamo.
Mm-hmm.
And my issue with the cover was not with Nomzamo. And I know about Nomzamo's work, and I've been celebrating with Nomzamo as like a black girl. I'm like, yes, sisters, do it. but then, so my fundamental questions are, how much is Cosmo and who is it reaching?
Okay.
If you check the price tag of Cosmo,
a
majority of black women cannot afford it. So who are you speaking to?
Okay.
It attaches a very classist aspect to activism and erases the real, very deep history of activism in this country, right?
Okay.
Thirdly, there was a line that says female rising, and I was just like, okay. What does that mean? What is a female? And you're attaching that to Womandla, which has a very deep history in feminist activism in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You're attaching it to feminism in this country without context. That cover was completely acontextual and erased the history of black women's activism in this country and placed a very... So it makes it look like activism has a face
sure.
and has a class
sure.
and has a... And most activists in this country are in the dark, dingy places that no one else is reaching. These are poor black women who make activism out of their money. They lost sense. They do things. Mm. So when are we going to highlight those things?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I was happy that I saw like a fellow activist in the cover, but the cover wasn't meant to highlight that, right?
Mm.
And then the other part was, let's talk about Cosmo's, particularly because they use a very feminist, and it was implied. It was implied. There's a deliberate, I looked at that cover. There's a reason why she looked like Beyonce in that ponytail. There's a certain class aspect and image that they're attaching to the word activism, which alienates people who don't look like Nomzamo, who don't have Nomzamo's money. So what does it mean to be a feminist in this country?
Mm.
What about Cosmo's role in giving sorry, in triggering insecurities in women, you have like this diet fads, there's all those things. Is Cosmo an activist issue? No, it's not.
Let's rope in another good friend of the show. And he's going to introduce himself, but he's a trailblazer in the LGBTQI plus spaces. Doing very important work in the country, and I'll leave the honors to him. He runs a digital magazine as well that we're gonna speak about, and how he's using that as well to as a voice for him and to advance his cause. Mutlatsi.
Hi, Vangani. Thank you.
So who are you? Our listeners.
I am Mutlatsi Mutsiwile @mans_MCM on And I mean, I am an entrepreneur. I'm a communicator. I'm gay, professionally.
A professional stubborn.
You know. And I mean, I operate in the media and communication space. Sure. I run a magazine, digital magazine called Grandeur. Mm-hmm. And currently excited to be launching and curating a list that will recognize and celebrate amazing LGBTI people across the continent. Mm-hmm. Just about what I do. I mean, every now and then I step into offices and I tell people how to speak to LGBTI people from a consumer point of view. So that's what I do for a living.
And we need that, right?
Of course we do. I mean, apparently the pink economy rather is worth 103 billion rands.
Really?
So, yes. So people need to be told how to get that money. And if they don't speak to us, then they're not going to get that money. So that's what I do. That's who I am.
Wow. So what is activism to you?
I mean, I can't necessarily disagree with what Nelly and Lerato have said activism is. But for me, I mean, I always find it's about living in such a way that, you know, puts across a message, a positive message. For me, it's about positive messaging in actions.
Okay.
So it's about what do you do daily or every now and then on the regular that then says we want to be seen, we want to communicate, we want to achieve certain things. I'm an LGBT activist. What am I doing for the LGBT community on the regular, on the daily? For me, it's about creating visibility. How do I do that? It's by putting out a magazine that then says LGBT people exist in different spaces, in corporate space, in politics, in communities, in various class spaces, etc., etc.
Sure.
It's about celebrating the achievements and, you know, existence of LGBTI people. You're doing that how? Putting together a list that then says there's an LGBT person in Nigeria, you know, which is one of the most homophobic countries on this continent, but there's an LGBT person in that particular country who's doing work that advocates for the rights of LGBTI people in that country. There's an LGBT person in East London, in Tanzania, who's constantly making noise about the recognition, the respect of rights of LGBTI people from a service provision point of view, from a social point of view, from a safety point of view, etc. And those people are activists as well.
Yeah. I mean, I had Siya Khumalo not so long ago on the show. I know he's a favorite to you.
Of course.
And he spoke about, you know, when he mentioned this, it was an eye-opener for me. He said, we need to build a society where gay people do not have to come out. And when I thought about that, I thought about depression as well.
Mm-hmm.
That the mere fact that someone will take their life is because there's people who look at people who have committed suicide and call them cowards, who call them selfish, who call them all these different things. So you're trying to deal with something within you, right, that you're trying to understand, and as well you need to cater for people's feelings. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts around this?
In an ideal world, I always say in an ideal world, people would not need to come out. And I think we kind of are reaching that idealistic place. It's a very interesting thing. So you find young people these days, like 16, 17-year-olds, don't come out.
Sure,
They bring their boyfriends and girlfriends home and they meet their parents. And, you know, and it's a conversation that, like, hi, mom, I'm your son, meet my boyfriend. And it's not a thing for young people because they're growing up in a different era. But then you still have 40, 50, 20-year-olds who haven't come out. Mm. They're living their lives as queer people, but then they haven't come out. Either they haven't come out at work, or they haven't come out to their families, or they haven't come out at church. And that's the, you know, the reality of coming out. People never stop coming out. You join a new company, and the first thing you do is, "Hi, I'm Mutlatsi and I'm gay." you move cities and you start, you know, you attend a different church and you come out because people want to come to your house, and then they come to your house, they must meet your partner. So you must almost like sensitize them. And part of that is, you know, coming out, because you wonder, will people be fine with coming to my house and meeting my same-sex partner? So, you know, so what I'm saying is, in an ideal world, people wouldn't need to come out. But then because of how society still, you know, navigates itself and still tries to understand the lives of queer people, then people still will need to come out. And because of how even systems, you know, government, politics, service providers, clinics, police stations, etc., how people who work in those particular spaces are, you know, wired to think about same-sex practicing people, then people constantly need to come out. You go to a police station. I did a dialogue the past weekend, and, you know, a girl was talking about how she went to police station to report a gender-based violence case, and then she says it was fine until they found out that her partner was, you know, a female partner, and suddenly the way she was being treated and suddenly the way her case was being handled was different because people didn't think it lost its importance. You know, yes, it was going to be very, very important when they thought it was a man who had abused her, but then the moment they found it was a woman, then it was like, but do we continue with this case? You know, and because of that, and part of that is coming out. So that woman went through different levels of violation, because once she had come to report her case to say, "I was violated by my partner," okay, great, we are going to help you. "I was violated by my female partner," okay, let's think about it.
Sure.
You know, so people constantly need to come out because of those things.
Sure. Let me jump in there and say, now we're in the digital in the digital space, right? There's plenty of hashtags that have come throughout the last couple of years to try and address certain issues like Fees Must Fall, Men Are Trash, Me Too, which has sparked a global conversation, right, on violence and discrimination, amongst other things. Are hashtags enough? How can we use social media to get the message across more effectively than we are doing now?
Okay, so I'll maybe share mine, how I became Babes of Petition.
Oh, tell us.
So back in 2016, when the police ministry released stats for the country around, yes, like violence and all of that. So the organization I was working with at the time, we did a series of articles around how young people are perpetrators as well as affected by violence. So we looked at different aspects of where young people are in terms of these numbers.
Sure.
And the one thing that stood out for me was the fact that Nyanga had been the murder capital for 5 years in a row. That was back in 2016. Mm-hmm. It's still the same, hasn't changed much. So that one stuck out for me because I grew up in Nyanga. I'm from Nyanga. I have family, I have home in Nyanga. So I was like, how did I miss this? How did I miss this at all? And I just started like Googling and looking up like how is this not a thing, right? And I was just like, I'm on social media, I'm on Twitter. The mayor's on Twitter. Why am I not asking the mayor?
Sure.
I mean, like, right, let's cut the conversation. Let me not wander anymore. The person that I need is within my grasp. And I mean, when she responded immediately, right? I think she didn't know what my intentions were in the beginning. And the more I was badgering her, the more she was just like, actually, like, nigga, get off me. I don't have an answer for you. So out of that frustration for me in that moment, I was like, I need to say something. Mm-hmm. And I felt that I could say something because, A, I have a friend who has an amazing platform where I could do a petition on Mandla.mobi. So I was just like, I'm going to just, you know, do that because I know I can, you know, I can get people around me. I can, you know, I have access to some media people through obviously being a PR person. I'll get enough voices, right? So for me, it was just like, I need to say something about this. The world needs to know. Let me get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
It took me less than 5 minutes to do the petition. I got everybody in the office to sign it. And then it was like, yeah. First day, I think we got like 50 signatures. I got 50 signatures. Then after that, it was like, boom, and dead quiet.
It just went
up. No.
Oh, dead quiet?
It went dead quiet, primarily because I assumed that people would care about the issue. Because sure. I was just like, these are black people dying every day. Surely people will care about this. It went dead quiet. Firstly, because I realized that people don't actually... We don't really care that much about each other, as I assumed, especially on social media. People will retweet your thing, but they won't necessarily put their name next to it. I think the petition only gained traction when Sabelo from Live Magazine interviewed me. Mm-hmm. And then they started spreading the petition, and then I started getting a lot of media attention.
Sure.
And it moved quite quickly.
Sure.
But before I stop, the one thing that made me kind of take a back step from the petition was sure. that over time people started assuming that I'm speaking on behalf of people in Nyanga, right?
Oh, okay.
And it didn't sit well with me because sure. I don't live at the time I lived Nyanga is the most dangerous neighborhood. I lived in the safest neighborhood of Cape Town, right?
Sure.
I lived in Fishhook. And I was just like, I can't be the spokesperson for a thing that I don't know about, in the sense that I don't experience that violence day to day.
Sure.
But I can still keep pushing. I mean, I still push.
Or stand in solidarity with them, right?
Yes. So I still push. I was adopted by a couple of other organizations. And most importantly,
Catch me. Let's hear Lerato and Mutlatsi, and then we'll move to a different aspect of the conversation as well.
I mean, first of all, I think there's a false dichotomy between what we term as online activism and on the ground activism, because people who are actually tweeting are people who are often very on the ground, right?
Sure.
So my experience with online activism, which for me then really showed me how much online spaces are very effective in helping bring about change and amplifying
sure.
people's causes, was during Fees Must Fall. Like, mm-hmm. brah, we'd get like tweets from people in America and China telling us, if you get tear gas, nagaso. We just like, oh, okay, so if we're getting tear gas, this is what we're going to do.
The TET and students knew best how to deal with it. Mm-hmm.
TET students knew best how, but like they were on their campus and they were fighting their own fight, right? But then mm-hmm. like we got information and ways of how to organize and how to actually push back or sort of mitigate the violence that universities and the states were throwing at us, right?
Sure.
And then we'd also say, like, Joe, Amaphoyisa, they're in this corner. Don't go there. Go that way. So that kind of sure. activism, I mean, look, there are limits to social media activism, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it should stop there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to do more.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the false dichotomy. I struggle with that false dichotomy.
Sure.
Because people are actually doing work online and offline to further these causes.
Mm.
What social media does is amplify and bring together causes that are not necessarily related, or people from faraway places.
Mm. Thank you so much, Morse.
I speak as someone who actually found their voice online.
Okay.
You know, prior to Facebook, I was just a student going to class, etc., etc. But then through realizing different people were doing different things and online and like learning of different movements and so forth, especially within the LGBTI space, I then, you know, found a way to plug myself into different movements on campus and off campus and start building relationships with different people who are doing different things, and finally finding a space where, you know, I, for lack of a better expression, found my niche.
Sure.
You know, where I could say I want to focus on visibility and not necessarily maybe health related matters.
Sure.
Of, you know, and that all of that began online, and I then realized that actually by starting to write about, you know, I started blogging like years ago, and for me that was me driving a movement around visibility, and that was also a digital tool that I used to then say, how can we start saying, as LGBT people, we can be seen wherever you're from. And that literally, I started having friends in Cape Town who got to read my blog because someone else on Facebook shared the link and so forth. So there is an importance to hashtags and creating community and proliferating information about our movements, like Lerato say.
Thank you so much. We're going to pause this conversation here, and we're going to... All right. So, continuing, actually, because we were supposed to have somebody on the line. Thinking about how now things play out on social media, the sensation and all these different things on certain aspects that are spoken about, how can we now, at this point in time, with relatively what you are all doing, move to a point where, as a country, racism is still a problem as well?
You think?
Hello. Hello.
Where we start getting more constructive with the hashtags and the causes that we're trying to put out. Because what tends to happen is the sensation happens on social media. You get to the boardroom, all these problems still exist. But we...
And also there's no connection between the sensationalism on social media. Like, you might spend a whole weekend having heated debates about race relations, etc. And obviously, your boss is not on Twitter. Your boss is not on Facebook. Your boss is not in your WhatsApp group.
Sure.
I think, for me... the difference is that I've grown up at a time where my activism, I lived on the streets before I lived it online. I worked for a trade union for a long time. So for me, I know social media is an amplification. I think we need to move towards a realization that it's not enough to tweet. It's not enough to hashtag. And if you can't join in person, make a point to read up about those things and how they fit into the general scheme of things. And also to avoid speaking for other people.
Sure. Lerato, before you come in, and Mutlatsi, before you come in, let's invite Kathy, who is on the line joining us from SADC, which is the South African Depression Group Association,
South African Depression and Anxiety.
There you go, Kathy. Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you so much for taking time out to join us. Obviously, there's news that's currently trending about the passing of the beloved Dr. Bongani. And, there's speculations around and there's conversations around depression and mental health. And we wanted to rope you into the conversation. We're speaking activism in the digital age. I guess the first question that I would love to ask is, how can, family members and friends who have people who live with depression be more supportive and be more helpful to people who are living with depression?
And that's such an important topic because, again, depression doesn't only affect the individual. It affects friends, family, colleagues at work. And often it can feel really helpless because you don't quite know what to do or how to do it or how to help someone. And we use the same example. If you had a loved one with diabetes, would you try to cure it yourself or treat it yourself? We're not experts in all these kinds of issues that can affect people, but the way that you can help is by offering support, getting them to a professional, learning up as much as you can about things like depression or anxiety. It's also things like a to-do and not-to-do kind of list. What should you say? What shouldn't you say to someone? And I think as a society, this brings in the stigma.
Mm-hmm.
So often we say, just snap out of it or think positively.
Those are the most frustrating things to hear.
Yeah. But again, we're not informed. We don't have the information. We don't know what to do or how to do it. And because it's not something that you can physically see, it's difficult for us to have to grasp and understand. And that's why education is so important and learning as much as you can about what it really feels like to have depression.
In corporate South Africa or in any working place, you know, it's difficult to have bosses and managers and key individuals to change the environment to accommodate people who suffer from any mental illness. So what is some advice that you can give to someone who's listening right now to the show, who's probably, you know, having panic attacks, anxiety attacks, and an occasional mood swings, right? And depression. What are some key helpful tactics to deal with those kinds of situations practically?
I think when we get the calls on a daily basis from people, it's a very stressful time for a lot of South Africans, whether it's work or personal, relationship types of issues. All of this has a massive impact on how we daily functioning. And when you're at work trying to concentrate and you're anxious or stressed and, you know, you're not eating, you're not sleeping, it's very, very difficult to cope. And I think it's going back to basics and looking after yourself and looking after your body. And it doesn't mean going taking a gym membership, but just making sure that you're eating well. And it could be the simplest thing, but often, you know, packing a lunch, packing a snack, eating something that's not fast food at the last minute, nourishing your body, making sure you're drinking enough water. Go to bed at the same time every night to make sure that you get enough sleep and that you're resting. Also making sure that if you have these symptoms that are impacting your daily functioning at mm-hmm. work and at home, that you seek professional help and you talk about it. I cannot stress enough, talking is so key. And sometimes you can't open up at work, you can't open up with a colleague or even a family member because you feel like they're going to judge you or they don't understand. Mm-hmm. You know what? Pick up the phone and speak to a counselor at FedEx. You can be anonymous if you want. You can phone us on our toll-free number, 0800 21 22 23. You can visit us on our website at www.fadag.org. The most important thing is that there is so much support out there and self-help tips and online tools. It's just about knowing where to go and how to access them.
All right. Thank you so much, Kathy. Before you go, Lerato has one quick question to ask.
Thank you.
So I have a quick question about your toll-free number. It's landline toll-free, right?
Sorry, say again?
Is it toll-free from a landline phone?
Landline and most cell phone networks.
We have
cell phone networks. We haven't had people that have been charged their airtime yet, but we just have that as a disclaimer. So you can phone us from 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night on 0800 21 22 23 or on our after-hours emergency lines 0800 12 13 14 or 0800 323 323. We also know that a lot of people might not even have airtime or they're worried about, you know, access to a phone, mm-hmm. but they can also SMS us and we can call them back. They don't have to stress about if it's going to affect the airtime or anything
what's
like that.
What's the number to SMS?
They can SMS us on 31393 and we will call them back. They can also go for online counseling via our website and you can chat live to a counselor on a daily basis. Or you can fill a form on our website and you can have a counselor call you back. So basically, there are a ton of different ways that you can access FADAG and access help. It's just about plugging in to whether it's the website, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, SMS, helpline, online contact forms. The most important thing is just to reach out. And if you have a friend that you're worried about, encourage them to speak to someone.
Well, thank you so much, Kathy, for joining us on the Youth Leadership Platform. And thank you for that information. And to everyone listening, please go and look up SADC and get the necessary help that you need. I mean, we all think or would like to think that we are strong and that we can weather the storms of life. And it's fitting because we're talking about activism and there's activism exists because people are going through stuff, right? People are experiencing injustices every single day of their lives. We're going to go around the table and we have 5 seconds each to give us your parting message to the Youth Leadership Platform listeners. We'll start with Mukhlati.
5 seconds.
Yes.
Get up and do something.
Okay. Thank you so much.
I think for me, a quick one is it takes more than just tweeting.
Sure.
Join us on Wednesday, 1 March, 1 August for the total shutdown.
What is the total shutdown, quickly?
The total shutdown, I think Loretta will do it better justice than me.
The total shutdown is a movement that was organized on Facebook by a group of women who were tired of the high gender-based violence rates in South Africa. It started on Facebook, and then it sort of migrated to actually people wanting to take to the streets. And it's on the 1st of August. For anyone who wants more information, because it's across the country, it's in Lesotho, it's in Namibia as well, because Comrades That Side are also supporting.
Sure.
If people want more information, I've got like a pinned tweet on my profile giving everyone information about the program, the starting points, the times, as well as how to donate to support the total shutdown
and
movement.
And what are your handles?
It's at...
At Women Protest SA.
Thank you. It's at Women Protest SA. That's total shutdown. I'm doing it in my individual capacity.
Okay.
My pinned tweet is at @Oya_Amorfati, which is OAY_AMORFATI. And then the pin, you don't have to follow me, comrades. The pinned tweet gives you all the information about the region, your starting times, and the entire program.
All right. Thank you so much to all our guests for joining us today. And, you know, one of the most important lessons I've learned, I guess, in this particular month is, even if in any issue or any injustice that you see, even if it does not affect you directly, you can show solidarity, because every ism, right, or any ism, we are all wanting equality in some form or way. And if you want to be supported, you also need to support other people. Thank you so much for listening to the Youth Leadership Platform. We'll bring you another installment next week. But for now, it's good day and God bless.
This is CliffCentral.com.